Good morning, everyone. I'm Reverend Krista Erickson. Thank you for coming. Appreciate you being here. Good morning. My topic today is prove it. Because that's, I love proving things to myself and sometimes to other people too, because, you know, we are human, but especially to myself, because I'm naturally a very skeptical person. And I question everything. Like everything. And I feel sorry for some of the people in my life that have to put up with all my questioning. But I do it because I love learning, and not just the important stuff, but silly stuff too. I love Google and living in an age where the answer to almost anything is literally at our fingertips. And I'm one of those annoying people that I will stop mid-conversation to Google something, to, you know, check the facts or to verify or to learn something new. But I just absolutely enjoy learning new things. But the one thing that Google has not been able to answer for me is, how does the universe work? Right? That's why we're here today, to figure that out. And from a spiritual perspective, because from a scientific perspective, the answers are out there. But from a spiritual perspective, that's a totally different story. So what is this thing that we call God? I have struggled with that question for much of my life. As a teen, I didn't like the definition that my church had given me about God. That God was kind of a jerk. You know, he was vengeful, he was spiteful, he would punish people. You could buy your way back to his side, you know, and I don't want to believe in that type of God. And yet at the same time, I was also supposed to believe that that God was also loving and caring. And that really confused me. So I kind of walked away from that. And it wasn't until nearly a decade later that I was introduced to a new God through the new thought philosophies. Because that whole time, I still believed in something greater than myself. I just didn't have a definition for it that I could believe in. Because we all get to believe what we want. We get to believe in whatever we want. But I needed something for me. And what New Thought taught me was that God didn't need to be personified. And that was the key for me. God isn't a person. God doesn't have a personality. God isn't judging us. He doesn't play favorites. He isn't vengeful. He isn't spiteful. It is a God who didn't reward or punish. A God that wasn't a person, but was all things, was everything. Energy itself, the universe itself. This was something that I was willing and able to believe in because, as I've said before on this pulpit, when you start asking more and more questions about God, eventually you have to come to the conclusion, or at least I had to come to the conclusion, that back of all things, that there has to be something. That when you keep saying, well, who created that? Who created that? Who created that? There has to be something there. And a lot of people, like scientists or atheists, they would say, well, that's the Big Bang. And I would say, well, who created that? There's something that started everything. And to me, that is what God is. It is that unknowable energy, that source of all that is, that source of us. But that only answers part of my spiritual question. Because if God is all things, and if God is an energy that doesn't play favorites, then why is life so unfair sometimes? Why do some people get all the luck? Why are there some people that I think are terrible have what seems to be a great life, and some people that I think are the best in the world seem to have a crappy life? This is where spiritual law comes in. This is where we get to prove to ourselves how the universe works. Now, simply put, and these are my own words, spiritual law is what you believe is what you get. It's not what you think, it's not what you say, it's not what you do. It's what you believe is what you get. Because what we think, say, and do are the results of our beliefs. But is our beliefs, whether conscious or unconscious beliefs, that work with the law of spirit? So we can train our thoughts, we can train our words, we can train our actions to help strengthen our beliefs, because they allow us to prove to ourselves that life can be better if we choose it to be. And in religious science, we call this demonstration. And to demonstrate simply means to prove, to exemplify, to manifest, to bring forth, to project into our experience something better than what we experienced yesterday. Whether that's less pain, less unhappiness, less poverty, less misery, it's more good. This is what is meant by demonstration, is simply more good than we had before. And to do this, to demonstrate, you cannot be filled with fear or confusion. You must keep yourself in a state of equilibrium, of poise, peace, and confidence, in a state of spiritual understanding. And by that spiritual understanding, it's meant that the belief of goodness must be greater than any apparent manifestation of its opposite. More good. It's a lot easier to say than it is to believe. That life is better than it appears. But it is. There is no secret in this business of demonstrating. The only secret is the persistent ability to use the law and the determination to continue to use it until you prove it. This is where we falter. Because a lot of times we try something and it doesn't work. And we might try it again and it doesn't work. And we try again and now we're starting to feel like a failure. And we give up. But like the song Kenneth just sang, never give up. Never give up. Because eventually it will work if you try hard enough. So how do we demonstrate? How do we prove things? How do we change our beliefs? Ernest Holmes says that one of the great difficulties in this new order of thought is that we are likely to indulge too much in theory and too little in practice. So it's really easy to talk about this stuff. It's really easy to read about it, even to think about it, but to actually put it into practice, that's the hard part. As a matter of fact, we only know as much as we can prove by actual demonstration. So that which we cannot prove may or may not be true, but that which we can prove certainly must be and is truth. And that's truth with a capital T. That's truth for you. It is easy enough to rush about shouting that there are no sick people, but this will never heal those who appear to be sick. It is easy to proclaim that there are no needy. Anyone can say this, but if we are to prove such statements to be facts, then we have to experience it for ourselves, because the law of spirit must flow through us in order to manifest for us. By consciously thinking, we give conscious direction to spiritual law, and it responds. So spiritual law, again, this is just an energy. You can think of it as karma. You get what you give. There's different words for it in different, you know, philosophies. But it's always out there working. And it doesn't care what you say, what you do, who you are. It gives in kind what you give. Because it is law. And this is one of my favorite lines from The Science of Mind. It says that spiritual law is no respecter of persons. And I love that, because it doesn't respect you, because it doesn't have any opinion about you. It is not a personified thing. Again, this is just an energy. It is a law. So this is why some people who we believe are bad have such good lives. And, you know, first of all, let's point out that, acknowledge that bad is purely subjective. Like, I can guarantee you that there are people out there that think I'm a terrible person, and I'm sure that there are people out there that think each one of you is a terrible person, right? Because we have all hurt somebody at some point in our life. That's part of being human. So calling somebody bad doesn't make them bad. That is just a reflection of our opinion on them. But our goal here in this life, I hope, is to do more good than bad. But I digress. So law is no respecter of persons, meaning that spiritual law doesn't care who you are, what you think, what you say, or what you do, but it will return in kind what you believe. Because the law of spirit doesn't have emotions, we have to think of it as a pristine gumball machine. You put a quarter in, and you can get a gumball out, because that's what it does. If you try to put a penny in, you're not going to get anything. So I've experienced this multiple times in my life, and I just wanted to give an example. There was a few years back, I had a fatty tumor in my arm that I found, and I've had them before. They've all been benign. I've had them removed with, you know, no long-term consequences other than a few surgical scars. But this one, I found it, and I didn't even think anything of it. I felt it one morning putting lotion on. I thought, oh, okay, you know, and I just kind of ignored it. And a few weeks went by, and it was still there, and I had mentioned it to Tim, and he comes from a family of doctors, and he's like, you got to go to the doctor. And I'm like, no, I don't. He goes, you got to go to the doctor. So I went to make him happy, and, you know, that takes a couple weeks, and I finally got into the doctor, and she said, oh, she's like, that's unusual. You need to go see a surgeon. And that took a few more weeks, and by the time I got to the surgeon's appointment, it was gone. It just wasn't there. And fatty tumors, these lipomas, they don't just disappear on their own. That's not something that they're known to do. And it has never come back. And for me, that was me putting spiritual law into practice in my life, because I refused to even acknowledge the fact that it was an issue. Now, I was able to do that because my past experiences taught me that it didn't have to be an issue. You know, because I had experienced this before. I had had these lipomas before. I've had them removed, and I've never had to worry about them. And that's spiritual law in action. Because I said, no, this is not going to affect me. I am whole, healthy, and complete, and every little cell in my body as well. So it went away. And this actually happened in part because of a couple of books I read. Are you guys familiar with Pam Grout? She wrote the book called E Squared, another book called E Cubed. Anybody aware? Okay. Only two of, we need a book club. You guys, this, it's incredible. So she wrote these books on manifestation. And it's called E Squared because it's, you know, science backed. And they are so good. They're full of experiments that teach you how to work with the law of spirit. And these experiments, they show us the power of focusing our minds and how by doing so, we can manifest, or as I call, demonstrate the law of spirit. If I remember correctly, her first experiment in the first book, E Squared, is you pick a color. Let's do this right now. Pick a color. You don't have to shout it out. Just think about it in your head. And now for the next 24 hours, I want you to count how many cars you see that are that color, no matter how strange the color was. And that's it. That's the experiment. So now what you're going to do, I don't care if it's in person, if you're watching a movie, if it's a YouTube video, your grandkids' toys, if you see a car or a vehicle in that color, just make a mental note of it and be on the lookout for it. And that's as simple as the experiment is. And I guarantee you that if you actually do this in 24 hours, so this time tomorrow, if you think, how many cars did I see? You're going to be shocked at the number of how many cars in that color you saw. The first time I did this, I picked purple because it's one of my favorite colors. And like, there's not a lot of purple cars on the road, but I saw so many purple cars. And the thing is, I am not manifesting those purple cars into my being. I am just making myself aware of it. Because what that experiment proves is that abundance is already here. Abundance is around us. You just have to tune into it. Because where you put your focus is what you're going to see in life. So if I believe that I'm going to see a bunch of purple cars in the next 24 hours, you better believe I'm going to see a bunch of purple cars in the next 24 hours. Because we live in a world of abundance, all of this is already here for us. And for me, that's one of the core parts of believing in spiritual law, is that anything that I could possibly desire is already here. I just have to be able to see it, acknowledge it, and then welcome it into my life. So these small exercises, they show us the power of proving to ourselves how focusing our thoughts, words, and actions train our beliefs. Because once we start believing, and like I mean actually believing, in our inherent power within to create our own reality, it starts to show up. I'm going to say that again. When we start believing in the inherent power within to create our own reality, it starts to show up. And that's when our lives get better. Little by little. Sometimes great by great. So I have a reading. This is from The Science Mind by Ernest Holmes. And it's funny because this is actually his final conclusion on a section of the book. And it says, in conclusion, what the world needs is spiritual conviction followed by spiritual experience. I would rather see a student of the science prove its principles than have him repeat all the world's words of wisdom that have ever been uttered. It is far easier to teach the truth than it is to practice it. But the practice of truth is personal to each, and in the long run, no one can live our lives for us. To each is given what he needs, and the gifts of heaven come alike to all. How he shall use these gifts is all that matters. To hold one's thoughts steadfastly to the constructive, to that which endures, and to the truth may not be easy in a rapidly changing world, but to the ones who make the attempt, much is guaranteed. So I want you to go out there and prove to yourself, because you don't have to prove it to anybody else, but prove to yourself just how powerful you are. You get to create your best life. You get to choose to be a little bit better than yesterday, a little bit better than an hour ago. You can be a little bit better a second from now than you are right this second. Because you deserve a great life. We all do. So I have one final thing, and that is on the 10th, the world lost a very dear lady. Her name was Sandy, and she is being celebrated coast to coast today through a couple of churches. She was in the ministry with me, so we've all spread out. So I just want to say to her, because I know that she is out there watching, that I thank her. And in particular, Munai Kukai Panye, thank you for walking me home, Sister Sandy. And thank you all for being here.